Warning, ProTri News is a podcast with different opinions, knowledge and possibly fake news about triathlon racing. This is not for the faint of heart. If you get offended or hurt by what is said, please stop listening and go listen to some uplifting meditation music or just go work out, then try again.
I started using the Magic 5 goggles back in 2021. For the last decade, I struggled to find a pair of goggles that didn't leak or fog up during a workout. When you're like me and wear contacts, having goggles that leak simply won't cut it. The Magic 5 has solved this and my goggle leakage problem with their easy-to-use 3-step face scan that optimally fits your goggles to your face. What does Jan Frodeno, Ben Canute, Daniel Backegaard, Lauren Brannon, and Vanilla Language all have in common? Besides being the best swimmers in the sport, they also use Magic 5. Visit themagic5.com/PTN and get your goggles today. This is affiliate code, not a discount code, because each pair of goggles that you buy helps support us, ProTri News, to keep this show going. Thank you and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome back to another episode of ProTri News. I apologize for our hiatus, but we are back. I'm your host, Kyle Glass. Sorry, college football has taken over my life, along with back-to-back-to-back racing in Formula One, plus triathlon, plus traveling, plus work. So,
Kyle, I think you're the only one on here that doesn't have a legit excuse. Like,
I'm free of excuses.
You were trying to ping us every day to record an episode, and I'm like flying to go do velodrome testing with Lionel, didn't have my mic, I'm going to a convention to dig through the convention. Mark, you were what, on a, how big was your tour you were doing?
Oh yeah, we came back via LA and then time difference. But I will add, Kyle is the only one with a real job. Like, Pat messes around with a cycling team. You piss around with Lionel. I carry bags for my wife. Kyle's busting out Dolly Parton over there working a 9-to-5, doing like kids sports refereeing and stuff. And we're going to give him shit for not doing it. But he did lay it on a bit thick. He was guilt tripping us big time. And then as soon as we got a date in, he cancelled on us. So
I apologize. It was my birthday. We got everything set.
Mate, you're not 12.
He turned 32 in Vegas.
32 is very important. And it was in Vegas, so.
Oh, fair. Yeah.
So, anyway. I apologize to our loyal listeners.
Pat, we're all naming our excuses. What, your wife's in Asia or something? Do you got an excuse for that? What's your excuse?
I mean, look, I was telling you guys before the show, I pulled off maybe one of the biggest parenting miracles to be on this show. So my wife's in Japan now. She raced in South Korea yesterday. Our au pair is gallivanting around Colorado for the weekend, which good for her. So I've got the two boys home alone. So I timed George's nap to be perfectly with this show. And then I called in a dear friend who I've known for 15 years to come play with Stanley. So I can see they're doing bottle flips right now in the living room. So I've got a solid 75 minutes here with you guys.
All the normal couple.
I love, that's got to be one of the most middle class first world problems. Our au pair has the weekend off, so I've been really struggling, darling.
Look, I'm having a great time. I can do the whole weekend by myself. I just can't come in and commit to 75 minutes of the podcast without Stanley, 6 years old, God bless him, coming in every 15 seconds telling me what he needs. So I think
I think it's going to be a big one as well, this. We've got a lot to cover, right?
I mean, I would say we got to dive into Kona first. This was the most stacked Ironman World Championship field for the females we've ever seen. And
I would say males as well. I don't think the men's field's ever been that strong either.
Agree. And agree. And not only that, but out of four of us, how many of us went to Nice? I can't remember.
None of us.
None of us. And three of us went all the way to watch this race. It was so incredible. So let's dive into it. All the females that pulled off before the start, before the race. Oh, wait, there was none.
Nope. It was a pretty much fully stacked field. No, none. I'm amazed because I sort of said I thought a couple of those, the top seven, who did, like, they did turn out to be the top seven minus, like, obviously Kat. Like, they all turned up, and I didn't think we would see all seven of them fit and healthy, which is amazing. I thought as well, like straight off the top with Lucy Charles, I think that's the best triathlon performance of the decade, male or female. I just thought it was majestic. Like she was leading with a gap in the swim from about 3 meters to the finish line convincingly. It was unbelievable. Thoughts?
I don't know that we've ever seen someone go wire to wire in that dominating of a fashion, both in 70.3 when she won her 70.3 world title in St. George, and then now this. So I think Lucy has officially cemented herself in, I mean, this sounds crazy, but into a GOAT conversation.
Obviously, that's crazy, but
she still has a lot left. Like, I mean, she's still super young. Yeah. So, I mean, there could be so much more upside for the next 10 plus years with Lucy.
Yeah, I think the reality too is, you know, she was second at this race 4 times. And so I don't like to use the word deserve. I like to use the word earn instead. She's earned the right to win this race and the right to be there. And after finishing second 4 times, I can't imagine how great that must have felt to finally get that done. So I think, yeah, the performance across the day was fantastic. And I mean, what can you say? She went from the gun. And so she obviously was, she wanted to get the job done, and for us to be able to see it and be there in person was really impressive.
I mean, I was watching her. She posted about an hour long pre-show on YouTube, and I watched the entire thing, and I texted her and Reese, and I was like, I'm so excited for you guys tomorrow. No, and I used the word deserve. No one deserves more than win to you. Good luck. Can't wait to watch you guys race. And then see her flawless race. I mean, when I look at her race, I don't see a single mistake. We've seen her fumble bottles in the back. We've seen her maybe mess up on nutrition, push a little too hard on the bike. I mean, she did not make a single mistake. Her, Dan Lerang, Reese, their entire team put together a completely flawless race. So cool to see that.
It's just a shame none of us picked her for the win on our live show.
Pressure.
Oh no, wait. Oh, I did. Called
did
it.
You actually?
Yeah, I did, yeah. But I didn't think she'd get caught. And then I thought Daniela would catch her, and then she ran Daniela down. But Lucy just seemed super confident going into it. Some of her bike Strava stuff was super good. Like, the whole team, she seemed really chilled at the pool. I'm stoked for her. Like you said, 4 seconds to win that, amazing. And ahead of other good performances. I thought last year, like, there was one standout performance, and then everyone else maybe underperformed a little bit. But Laura Phillip and Anne Haug were on good days. Like, you're never going to get all 7 of those women having good days. But when 3 of them do, and Anne Haug runs her best ever race there, runs the run course record, rides well, Laura Phillip stays near the front, doesn't have penalties or problems. Like, she had to take down some monsters in that race. And up at Harvey, when we got there, and she still had she'd extended the gap on Taylor by 20 seconds or something. And Taylor asked us, is it 2 minutes to Lucy? I said like 2:20, and Taylor like looked like she was in zone 1, to be fair, but she said, oh wow, like she was just gobsmacked that someone was ripping time into her, and that's all Lucy did all day.
And when you were talking to Taylor, did she stop and pull over and like get a coffee with you guys, or was she just ran by? Because I think she's chatting with everyone.
I do think Taylor's attention is maybe something that she will work on in her Ironman. You can't have a conversation with someone all day long. You can't chat to the cameraman. And every time, everyone she went past, she was telling she lost an interest. She just needed the stimulation, I think, of like the boredom of being alone for the whole day. And which is, I guess, a massive problem to overcome when you're off the front. Like, it must be boring and lonely.
No, I mean,
Lucy wasn't chatting to people. Lucy was just drilling her head down. Taylor was chatting away to people the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about in road racing, you have to accept the moments that are very boring and to get through them and not waste them away. And so, yeah, I would concur, Mark. That seems to be like an opportunity to have a little more acceptance of the. I don't want to say boredom, but it's a monotonous thing, right? You're riding for 180K at a prescribed effort that isn't, you know, you're not going full gas. So, yeah.
And unfortunately for her, like every Ironman Taylor is going to do, unless she gets her swimming back to where it was, that's how the race is going to have to be for her. You know, every Ironman Taylor does is going to be lonely off the front. T?
And just to be clear, everyone, we're not saying that because Taylor was talking to the cameraman, she lost the race. We were just making note.
Oh my God.
It's really, really cool. It's really, really cool that she is just so not, I don't want to say oblivious. She's one of the smartest, most intelligent people I've ever met, but it's just amazing. Amazing.
It's just part of her personality.
Yeah. And roll back to Lucy real quick. I mean, consistency. There's no one else in the entire field that's had the consistency that she has.
I would challenge that. I think Anne Haug has. So Anne Haug's not been off a podium since 2018. Lucy has she missed the podium in the PTO Singapore. I think Anne Haug is. I'm going to challenge.
Kona. Sorry, I just meant just Kona.
True, but Anne's also been on every single podium, which is mad. And she made it to St. George healthy, which Lucy didn't do, and she podiumed there as well. Like, but Lucy was the queen of the day. I'm not trying to say Anne Haug was a better triathlete. Yeah. No one is a better triathlete in the world right now than Lucy Charles.
Yeah, just so cool. So exciting for her.
Other things I thought were interesting. Yeah, it's just really exciting. She's just good for the sport, right? I thought some of the talk around Taylor was mental before the race. I don't know how people thought she would have double-digit lead off the bike. I actually thought her race was really good. I thought that was a really commendable first Ironman, because it's not a first Kona. That's a first Ironman and one of the hardest Ironman in the world. It was horrendous. It was so hot, wasn't it, out there? And I thought fourth for her, to be honest, was a really, really good race. I think the expectations were maybe unrealistic because it's Taylor Nibb. Like, I understand why they were. She's ridiculous, the most talented athlete there. But Pat, I thought that was a good performance.
I think you can only be happy when you look at it. And I think you have to realize that also every step after, you know, really 19 miles was a new territory. And so, yeah, I think how can you not look at that, especially given the age too, and go, you know, look, I think with some proper and focused training, yeah, that's obviously, there's a lot more opportunity there. So I think it was a very, yeah. There could have just been, I mean, it was so hot on the Queen K on the way home. Like, there could have just been an epic meltdown. And obviously, I mean, we saw, you know, even Lucy's gap at the end to Anne Haug was only 3 minutes. And it was, I think it was 13 when they got off the bike. So, you know, there was some people crumbling. That last 2 miles was absolutely brutal. And I just, my first time being there, I had no appreciation for how hilly that run course is. It's no joke. And so I really underestimated that, just always watching the race on TV. And for anybody that's watched it and hasn't been there, you can't comprehend how hilly that run is, even in great weather.
Yeah, agree. Yeah.
And Patrick, what was the words that Taylor said to you after the race? How much she hated it? What'd she say to you?
I think it was pretty opposite of that. I think she was, she seemed to be quite elated at the whole experience. And I think what we haven't talked about enough with Kona, and I want to talk about the results a little bit more, but we'll get to the whole Kona experience and the legacy that's there, and where does Ironman go from here? Because that was really where I left the weekend. But let's talk a little bit more about the actual breakdown of the race.
Yeah, Mark, will you run us through the race real quick?
Yeah, and I'm going to be real fast because I think everyone watched it. If you didn't watch it and you listen to this podcast, I don't know what you're going to be getting on. Lucy Charles went ballistic off the front. There was then a big chase pack in the swim, which split. Zielinski, the American girl, was kind of leading that. Taylor was hovering around hidden. Chelsea had the swim of the day. Actually, Anne Haug probably had the swim of the day in the second pack to get out with Daniela, Kat, Lisa Norden, etc. And then Daniela sort of led the charge, split the chase pack up. Taylor was losing time straight away to Lucy. And then the chase pack kind of broke up in an unexpected way. Daniela didn't lead it. Lisa Norden went ballistic up the hill. The only people that could really go with her that were contention was Laura Phillip. Jocelyn McCauley went with her, but obviously can't run with those girls at the moment. And then it was a battle between Can Taylor outrun Lucy? It was quickly evident she couldn't. Lucy did the job. Taylor kind of drifted towards the second half. And how did her usual? She ran a 2:48 on that course in that heat. She's just disgusting. And Laura Phillip hung on for third. I'm super happy for Laura, actually. Really nice to see her get a podium at a big stage race because she deserves it. She's a caliber of athlete that absolutely needs that on her resume. And that was sort of rounding out the podium. There were some fights for the top 10. Chelsea Staro ran really well, but she just lacked the bike power all day, basically. But she ran herself up into the top 10. So, yeah, I mean, it was an insane field with an insane race. I have one grumble on it. Can I have a grumble?
Please.
Bottles and the rules.
Oh.
Rule is, it's a 1 minute penalty if you accidentally lose a bottle. And in the pro briefing, which I sat on, obviously, the athletes were all questioning Jimmy and Ron, the head referee, and Ironman's head referee. Like they just didn't want this rule because the bottles they had now on course are little plastic ones and they just eject from your cage. So what are you going to do? And the Ironman sort of said, we want to listen to you and we're happy to change the rules, you know, when good suggestions are made. But people have been making the suggestion all year. Philip Seep was hot on it because it happened to Laura. So then you're sending athletes out that they just know they're going to get 1 minute penalties at random. I just think it's a bullshit rule. And I don't know why it can't be enforced on TV. What's your point about
that? You took the words right out of my mouth. It's bullshit. And I think it lacks complete common sense. You take those bottles that they have and you put them into every single athlete's cage and you turn the bike upside down, the bottles fall straight out. If you take a traditional water bottle and you put them into the athlete's bike and you turn the bike upside down, they stay in. End of story. And so for Jimmy Riccitiello and Ron to not be able to see through this problem and say, dude, we're not going to call 1 minute penalties here. It's complete ignorance and arrogance combined.
I agree. I also actually think it's a real bad duty of care. Like, I don't think you realize how dangerous and stupid this race is. Like, marathon runners complain when it hits 25 degrees. These ladies are in 32 degrees in the blistering sun for 8.5 hours. You should be making it easy for them to get nutritional board, not worry about bladders down the top and stuff like that. I thought it was daft. You know, you don't want an athlete riding along biting her bottle like Taylor. I will say, Taylor's cages were stupid and shit. She shouldn't have lost both her bottles straight away. Like that was, because they were her own bottles. I get that. But the other ones...
Here's the thing. Unintentional littering for bottles being ejected from your bike shows no matter what the water bottle situation is, it shows a very clear lack of understanding of like the road conditions. And when you're going 55K an hour in some cases and you hit, it could be a pothole, a crack in the road. I put sandpaper on the inside of my wife's bottle cages. You can still lose bottles in the right scenario. It's different than if you're negligent in taking an empty gel wrapper and putting it down your shirt and you miss it, that's, I think, a little bit different story. But the bottle thing should just be completely off the table.
Can I just say, I'm not saying Taylor's stupid. I meant the cages. So whatever cages she had just clearly didn't work right. That's all.
There's a difference between chunking a water bottle into the lava fields and a water bottle falls.
Oh, yeah. So
the athlete is intentionally trying to get rid of the water bottle. I'll go back to Ironman Cozumel does a fantastic job of giving you special water bottles and ensuring that they are they're printed with Ironman Mexico on them. They go perfectly into your Gorilla bottle cage. They go into every bottle cage and you never have issues with them.
I imagine, though, that's an extra $20,000.
But if you're spending
with the number of bottles,
dollars. You're spending $1,500 for an Ironman World Championship.
Anyway, that's enough. Yeah. We've done long enough on that. Wait, yeah, it was perfect.
I did hear from someone that was attempting to, in the past, become an Ironman sponsor for hydration, that they estimated they needed around 900,000 bottles
for now, other events. That's for the entire year for Ironman events. So I think...
could you imagine 900,000 water bottles on Kona?
Yeah. I mean, I had to order.
No. Yeah.
No.
I just meant if they were going to print water bottles like Mexico, because they're different entities, If they're going to print, I mean, that's what it would require, which that is a lot.
You just need to get rid of the rule. No, I get why they use the disposable ones. Like, it does, I understand that, the cost. But just, even if it's for the pros, like, I know that's, you can have different rules. And a 1 minute penalty affects a pro a lot more than it does nearly every age grouper. Like, just get rid of the rule. If it's firmly in the cage all the way in and then comes back out, there shouldn't be anything. That's ridiculous.
Also, can we talk about how we haven't necessarily seen this as much in the past, but how much the female side of the sport has been developing, and to see the packs riding. We only recently, I don't want to say recently saw this, I mean, we've seen this for years, but the large amount of packs athletes dropped out, the pack dynamic now in the women's field on how crucial it's become is really exciting to see.
Yeah, the sport's come on. The women's sport has been behind a little bit in terms of the depth. And I think the depth has just improved to bring it to where they're all able to hold each other. And there's the importance of it. Some of the riding was, I thought the refereeing was pretty good all day within the rules they have. I thought the cameras were really good and fair. I thought the race was really well executed. Some of the ladies in that second pack took the piss a bit. You could see it on the side angles. You could see people like Lisa Norden 15 meters back. And then you could see a couple of the other big names, like six back. But at least the referees weren't firing out quite so many penalties. I'm not sure where I sit on it. I thought it was pretty well refereed in general. I thought the whole thing was brilliant in general.
So I think from an event standpoint, it was obviously amazing. Talbot and I got to be at the finish line at 8 o'clock for dinner, and I thought we had an amazing experience there. Do you guys mind if I just maybe take us back a few days? And we haven't talked about the race itself being on the island, the announcement that happened with the Pro Series the week of, probably where we think Ironman's at and potentially where do they go from here with the split events. So is that okay, guys?
Yeah. Should we roll straight into talking about the Pro Series here rather than a bit of a hot take?
Before we move on,
go on.
Can you tell the listeners, I got too many DMs. Is your wife okay?
Oh, yeah. Yes, she's fine. She's mentally rough, obviously, but getting better by the day. I'm not going to make excuses for her or give reasons here. Like, she can choose to do that if she wants, but she's healthy and she's fine. Like, looking forward to what's next. The Ironman series, probably another race this year. But I'm sure she'll talk about it more, but she just doesn't like excuses. So,
yeah,
it was a physical thing. It wasn't anything desperately avoidable. That's, yeah, but she's miserable. It was a rough week, but she's good.
Yeah. Great. I'm happy.
All right. So just before I flew to the island and on Thursday, Wednesday, there was a press release that announced the Pro Series for the sport of Ironman. And we can talk about the actual, you know, the in-depth part of it and how many races score and the points and et cetera. And, you know, I think the reality is ultimately Ironman put in an almost $2 million into an overall for 18 specific pro races. When that happened on Wednesday, I don't think that any of us saw that in the realm of possibilities of things that could be announced for the future of Ironman. And, you know, I think people are quick to probably judge the point series, and we're going to see how that pans out. But for me, it's a temperature on how great it must be to be a pro athlete right now and the options that are available to you. And so I can't think of a better time to be in the sport of triathlon with the amount of races that are available. This is from short course to long course now. It's covered. You can do it, and there seems to be great, there seems to be great financial incentive wherever you look. So, you know, I don't know if for this pod we probably break down and say, what does that mean for the athletes? How does the scoring work? What does this mean for PTO? I don't know if this is the right podcast to do that on. I just think that just completely blew up maybe this sport in a very, very positive way. And I was lucky enough to speak to Andrew Messick on Saturday morning about it. And he said, you know, look, this is a series that's focused on athletes that do Ironman races. And he goes, not just the Ironman brand, but specifically the distance, right? And he goes, that's what this series is catering to. So I hope that it's something that we can get, you know, Mr. Messick on the pod and to speak maybe more about. We have some more questions, but I think the overwhelming, you know, it was the talk of the town all week, and it was just like, dude, this is crazy. And it's fantastic to see Ironman really invest in the professionals.
So I think it's long distance, right? Because the PTO has done wonderful things for the sport, and they've clearly elevated Ironman, forcing them to do something better. And Ironman have learned from the PTO, and they're now producing a better product. Great, good for the PTO. It's not long distance. It's not even middle distance. So but they call it long distance triathlon, right? Ironman is given an actual long distance triathlon option. They prove they have the greatest event going, like for sure. Kona's the best event in the world, and then the best athletes all want to go and do it. The women's field showed that they now have an option to compete for good money over long distance triathlon. The other thing Ironman has is a huge advantage is in the background, the PTO is scrabbling to get their five races together, which they might get five. They wanted 10, then it's 8. Now it's, you know, can they get 5? And they might get more. Ironman has, I think they've got 2 booked at the moment, but anyway. Ironman has 50 odd races to choose from, all prepped, all the organizers there, all financially viable. And it goes, these 18 are part of the series. Done.
Well, I think, I think it's actually 190 events total.
I don't know how many pro races there were because
they
haven't even had 10. Yeah. What I love about it is a couple of things. They haven't had to add prize money to these races. They have some highlight events in that calendar. So they have Texas, they have Hamburg. Is it Hamburg or Frankfurt this year? One or the other for the women or the men. I don't know which one it was. One of those is one of the events. They're 175 grand prize pots each. So they'll draw huge crowds. So it gives athletes like a dilemma. You know, do they go and challenge their Ironman events? Because you basically need to do 3 Ironman races and 2 70.3s as you're scoring 5. You score so much more for Ironman races and you score more for the world champs. The best way of doing that possible would be 2 small Ironman where there's a low field that turns up. So do you go to like Australia, etc. And then you have to do 70.3 worlds and Ironman world champs because they have more points. And then you need a small 70.3 because they don't differentiate between the level and the field. They haven't complicated it, which just naturally will spread their massive pool of great athletes around these races, which is great because you'll just see odd battles. But then you'll see a few of the big names go, fuck it, I actually want to earn some money on this. So I'm going to go to Texas and Frankfurt and Kona or Nice. And you'll get massive fields at an Ironman 3 times a year. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. And I think, a second order effect for this, obviously, is it's very clear in the language of this press release that it was, you know, come one, come all to these events. And, you know, are we going to see a pro men's race or a pro women's race that exceeds 100 entrants? And what's it going to be like if there's 100 people doing a pro men's race at Ironman? There's some second order effects that I think are very cool. There's also some second order effects that are really going to push where we've always talked about with respect to drafting, right? And so I'm really excited for this whole thing, but we're going to see some field sizes like we've never seen before.
Which I think that's a really good point. Go on, Talbot.
Go ahead, Talbot.
I want to say some good things, some bad things. My problem is with the point system, but I don't want to be too fixated on this because I believe it will change. I don't believe it will be stuck like this. But for
What's
example,
your problem with it? Can you?
Yeah, my problem with the point system right now is that you have Jan Frodeno, who finished 42 minutes behind Sam Laidlow at the Ironman World Championships in Nice this year, and he scored 3,461 points. And Rico Bogan, with a phenomenal performance, who absolutely obliterated an insanely stacked field, got 3,000 points. So I think that could be fixed just a little bit more. Because, I mean, reality is my only thing that I don't like about it is it really does, I don't want to say forces athletes to chase the points to do more Ironmans, we do know that when you need to be in prime shape for Ironmans, 3 to 4 performances a year, a lot of professional athletes' body at the rate that they train and they perform at cannot sustain a full year long of that many Ironman races. It's kind of, you're just asking for injury. What, Pat?
I'm going to tend to agree. I think the 3 Ironmans pushes the boundaries of what's probably physically possible and sustainable. But let's see. I'm optimistic that this series, whether it's the points, whether it's the scoring, that can, what we see the first year might not be what happens in the second year. So I think all in, I'm really excited. I think I look after some pro athletes that all of a sudden they're just like, what just happened? This is absolutely insane. This is so good for me.
Oh, yeah. Especially when you haven't seen a PTO contract. Like, you don't know what your alternative option is. And Ironman's gone, there's an option for you. I think just 2 on the points, Talbot, and one thing to come back to. Back to prize money. I really like that they've kept the prize money the same at all the other pro events that aren't part of the 18 series. Because not only are they saying any pro in the world can turn up and take part in our series and try and earn money, they're also saying, if you're a neo-pro, you need to earn a living, we've got all these other races for you as well, which won't have all the hitters, and we'll pay you. You know, we'll help you get there. I think that's really cool. The points when I get you, Talbot, what I don't like is when people are showing examples, your specific example works, but when they're like, oh, so-and-so would be ranked 1 in the world at the moment, isn't that ridiculous? Well, of course, but they weren't racing to that. You know, they weren't racing to a known criteria. I agree with you about the injury thing. I think you can see different athletes, right? Like, are you a one-hit wonder? Lucy's not a one-hit wonder. She's the most consistent athlete in the world. But every now and again, she's perfection. Versus someone that trains specifically to be good at 3 races. Like someone like, I'm going to stick with women because we're doing what I say women show. Someone like Sky Monge, I reckon, can roll out 3 Ironmans in a year at a canter. Never gets injured. She'll look at doing that and be like, no dramas. Sky might message me after and say, fuck off, and I want to be 3 Ironman in a year. But she's an example of someone I think can do that easily. I think you could see like different people. Someone that wins the series might not win the 70.3 Worlds or Kona. They'll just be able to be injury free and consistent all year. And that gives us something else to talk about.
But my hope is that, what I want to shed some light on is I want the listeners to understand that, you know, I work with brands who obviously invest in the sport. This has created an excitement in the sport that I've never seen before from a brand standpoint. And what that means ultimately for the athletes and commercially for entities like the PTO or like Ironman is ultimately very good. And there will be more money coming in. And I think this will be, Ironman will ultimately reap the rewards of this on a commercial standpoint, because this happened. Every single brand is asking me what I think about it. And my answer is I think this is amazing. And I think you're going to see more brands investing in triathlon, because there's going to be more visibility on the highest tier athletes than we've ever seen before in this sport. So it's going to come from all angles. It's going to come from short course, middle distance, long course. This is I can't convey how prosperous of a time this can be for the sport.
I think I had a conversation with Andrew Messick on the Thursday, and he was really astute to it. So he was asking about earning. He clearly didn't really know massively about how much athletes make in bonuses and how much Kona was a win was worth. And I said, you know, bonuses will make more money than the prize money, etc. And he asked straight away, what can we do to help athletes make big bonuses for winning our series? Straight away, like, inclined to it. And I basically said, and Pat, I don't know if you agree, like, people will put $100,000 bonus on winning Kona because they're buying a product. They know what it's worth to them. They'll happily pay that. And if you win it, they don't mind paying. What they don't know this year is how much the series is worth. So my answer to Andrew was, the only thing you can do is hype the series as much as possible, make it a huge thing, make the winners seem like the best in the world, and the brands will follow that with bonuses. What's your thought?
Yeah. No, I mean, you're exactly right. And I'll just give you some context into how that works, right? So this happened with the PTO stuff. So we'll say, Mark, pretend that, you know, you're my athlete, you're a professional, and you've got a 3-year bike deal. we're not going to get to add in that World Series bonus from Iron Man until the end of your 3-year deal. But by that point, you will have, we will have seen and understood what the series could be worth, right? If they have an, if you're an athlete right now where your contract is up at the end of this year and we're renegotiating for 2024, a brand doesn't know what that series is worth yet either. And so they're not going to be confident to place really, you know, let's say, let's make up a number, $10,000. I don't think that they're going to have that buy-in quite yet. So we saw this very similar with the PTO. Year one, that was a little bit, that was hard to get a PTO race bonus in. Year two, it became a little bit easier. Year three, all of a sudden now that's just normal. That's just baked into every deal. We're going to have PTO race bonus. We don't know. It's going to be, we don't care if it's the US Open, Asian Open, European Open. We're happy to pay a bonus because we know that the PTO is going to focus on and celebrate and create an additional spotlight on this race. So yeah, no, Mark, you nailed it. And ultimately if Ironman is promoting this pro series, brands will want to attach themselves to it.
Cool. So we're excited, is our general. Carl, are you excited for it?
I'm still indifferent about it. I think that it could do a lot of good. I'm a little sad that there's only 5 races in the U.S., but I mean, I think there's more races in the U.S. than there is everywhere
else. You're getting 2 PTO races, hopefully, as well.
Allegedly. I mean, we'll see whenever the PTO races come out. So.
Yeah.
Hey, Kyle,
five of 18, sorry.
I'm sorry. That's, you're getting 20% of it. We're crushing it. And one of them,
yeah,
you get
40% of the races, mate.
One of them.
I was thinking one in Asia, one in Europe, and all the rest in America,
like around the world.
Maybe not one in Mexico or something. Yeah, like that. Like
America. Yeah.
What? One in Mexico? So you boys can pop down to like Cabo and have a nice weekend away. Yeah. But nothing too far, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
And one of them he's got a free homestay at. So I'm like, what gives, Kyle? I mean, we got.
I'm with Talbot on the points thing. I think that they need to flesh that out a little bit better. If we're gonna have,
I think it should be 5 Ironman races.
Yeah,
I think it should just be 5 Ironman races. Nothing else.
Nothing else. Okay.
Half a minute line.
The other thing that I want to emphasize on, because it is always a massive topic in triathlon, and I've gone back and forth on Instagram DMs with another pro athlete who I won't name, but they represent, I would say, like the you could almost say B level pros. A level is your Jan Frodeno,
your household names.
Yeah, your household names. Then there's like, let's say B level, and they fought with me all year long on, but the PTO's just helping the rich get richer, and now Ironman is just going to take away all these races, and then there's going to be near as many Ironman races. So then Ironman comes out with an announcement. I message him, and I'm like, this is absolutely incredible. And they're like, kind of. And I'm like, kind of? What do you mean? And I'm like, there's literally all, let's say your A-level athletes are going to go to the PTO races, or they're going to choose the Ironman series races. I mean, you would be, I don't want to say that none of them are going to go to, because if you haven't followed this announcement, there is 18 races, like what Mark mentioned, to, or 20 or 18 races.
18.
But then there is also a massive amount of pro races that are not in the series that I don't see, if you are Magnus Ditlev, why you would not go, or why you would go to one of those. So that makes
it. You haven't got time.
Exactly.
You just don't have, because you're going to do 5 Ironman brand races, and you might still try and do the PTO series as well, because they're only 100K. You go punt around. Like, you haven't got time to do anything else.
And the argument was, but who wants to win a race at that caliber? If you say there's no one there, then, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't even debate with you, because if you want to win a top level race, then like, I'm not saying that they aren't training hard. I'm sure they're training hard, but I'm kind of like, this is an amazing time for the sport. If you are a B-level pro now, you have incredible opportunity to make money and make a living in the sport now. And
yeah,
A-level pros.
Because you can race 10 races in a year and not touch someone like Magnus.
Because to take a shot at PTO, yes, they have put together a package because they're trying to sell TV time. They want the best athletes in the world there. But yes, it doesn't help the lower level pros. And Ironman has just come in and been like, look at this. If you're an A-level pro, you're going to make a lot of money. If you're a B-level pro, you're going to make very good money. So, very exciting, Pat.
All right. I want to change subjects here. I think we talked about, we're all thrilled for the Pro Series, excited about it. But the big thing that, the next big thing that was spoken about all week at Kona was the split, right? The men were in Nice, the women were in Kona, and the whole time I'm sitting there in Kona and I'm perplexed at where they go from here, right? And ultimately, it's Ironman, I think, wants 2 days of racing in Kona. They'd love to have Thursday, Saturday. They'd love to have maybe Saturday, Saturday. But the island won't allow it for now. They've got a four-year contract where they're going to split it. And, you know, I was doing an interview with Ironman, and I made this comment, and I said, yeah, and when the final year at Kona is in 2026... And Julia stopped the tape and she goes, hey, whoa. Patrick, this is the second time I've heard this. Why do you think 2026 is the last year here? And I said, well, I go, you know, I read between the lines on this 4-year deal. And this is a timeline that you guys have put in place with the island. And beyond that, in 27, we don't know where it could be. Could be in Kona, could be in Nice. And, you know, I think this is ultimately the conversation that I had the most with. I was speaking to brands and said, how did you guys handle going to Nice, coming to Kona? What do you think? And they said, look, the energy in Nice was great. That felt like a world championship. This feels really special to us because it's Kona. And there's so much legacy tied into the island with the brand. And I don't know. My question for Andrew Messick off the record or on the record would just be, if you could wave your magic wand, what would you make happen? And it would be two days of racing in Kona? Would it be a roaming world championship that the participants don't care so heavily on what nation they're taking place in a world championship? You know, what does that look like? And I left with more questions than answers, because I don't think Ironman knows what they're going to do beyond 26. And I don't think they know what their base wants them to do necessarily. And maybe this takes another 2 or 3 years to really get itself sorted out.
Yeah, I agree. I don't like the split fundamentally, because I feel it's a family sport. I don't mind it moving every so often, as long as it comes back to Kona regularly. I will say, I popped into the banquet. Manworth got it right. You know, if you're a single man, Kona was the place to be this weekend.
Dang it.
Kyle, mate, honestly, the banquet, there were 2,500 or whatever, athletic, beautiful ladies in long flowing Hawaiian dresses, all dolled up for the night out, having just had the best days of their lives. It was a hell of a sight, mate. So
couldn't you say the same thing about these, though? If you're a female,
you could, but it doesn't float my boat in quite the same way.
Everyone wants green cards, Talbot. It's all Europeans that were in Nice.
Oh, so American.
Okay, but no, but seriously, guys, say that we get a seat at the table and we're trying to advise Ironman on what to do. What is their path forward here?
They've got to get through this 4-year deal. I think they've got to find a way of bringing the race back together. Personally, because I think they'll run out. I think a lot of the women that did Kona this time were, the average age was 44. The average age of the rolled down athlete was much older than that. They clearly had the money to go. It was a bucket list race. How many times do people want to do their bucket list race? So I wonder if they're going to get through that crunch of people that wanted to roll down to go to Kona. I don't think you'll see it quite the same in Nice. And I don't think you'll see the Kona numbers quite the same in 2 or 3 years if they keep the split. If you are able to have big fields, they can travel with partners, friends, it's a family thing, men and women, you know, there will be men that didn't race Nice because they wanted to go to Kona with their wife and vice versa. That's why I would like it for the age groupers. I would like it to be back together. The pros, it's just a bit less fun. There's less banter around the town. But I think it's a family sport. Cole?
This could be very bold of me to say, but I think that Ironman is going to have a tougher time selling Nice to the women than they did to the men.
I think that's a fair thing to say. And I think the only consolation they have there is how European focused the sport is and how easy it is to get to Nice. Right. And so, you know, my understanding of speaking to people was accommodations in Nice were easy. Travel was easy. The duration to get there, because I speak to mostly Europeans in this case, they all loved it. They go, look, it's a 2-hour flight. Super easy. So I think that we're going to see there's a world where we could see even more roll downs. We probably don't have an understanding of where the ages will go, because you might just have a 20, 30 year old that where it rolls down and they have the opportunity to do it. And the travel is much, much easier and much more cost effective to get there. So I think that's going to be something that they have to sort out in when they're going to learn in year two.
Yeah. I don't think that quite happened this year, because I think there was like reticence about going to Nice. It's not a real world champs. The perk Ironman has is the race in Nice was brilliant. The course was really good. People loved it. So you're looking in year two and it's really close to you. Suddenly, I think that might draw a bigger European crowd, because amazing. America was still like, was it not the biggest contributor to Nice in terms of single nations? You know, so yeah. I think that needs to shift slightly, but I think that's because there's so many more diehard triathletes in America than there are in Europe, but there are more triathletes in Europe and now they see it as a good race. I think you might be right about that.
And I also want to give a case where it should be split, right? I think that the week leading up to Ancona, you saw the pro women's field get more media attention and they got more, I'll just call them eyeballs, than ever before. They didn't have a race that happened 2 days after that overshadowed it. They were the star of the show for the entire week. And I think that that had a positive effect on those individuals, those 55 women, larger than we've ever seen before in our sport. And I think that would be, it's important to recognize that. I think that's to me a case to keep it separated. And I think for even our podcast, we enjoyed having the race is 6 weeks apart, because we got to build up one race and then 6 weeks later we got to build up another one. And that was, I thought that was cool. So again, I just think if I'm on the board at Ironman, I don't know. I don't probably have enough information yet to make a clear decision or a recommendation on what direction they should move forward.
As a reminder, each and every one of our podcasts is brought to you by Waterfall Racing, which is a community of welcomed triathletes from last place to first place. The annual fee is $75 to join. It is the best deal in triathlon. You can get cash prizes for podium bonuses. You have community support through their Discord group and social medias with race meetups. Also, Zoom channels and interacting with some of the professionals on their team. So if you would like to join a triathlon team that is centered more so around family rather than Instagram posts and how many interactions you get, join Waterfall Racing. You could also set up a Waterfall bank account. It's a FDIC bank that provides both commercial and personal banking for companies and individuals who want to get the best technology and top-tier customer service. So visit waterfallbank.com to learn more.
Right. Before we move on from Kona, I think it's important to hit on this.
There's one more thing.
Kyle's screwing himself in. Oh,
we close it.
This is, I mean, but you can't move on from this. And this is the qualifying for Kona. This is a really big deal because they released their new qualification standards for the professional athletes, i.e., if you are a podium athlete at an Ironman World Championship, or you are a past winner of the last 5 years, you did not need to validate your slot due to the COVID rules they had released for the last couple of years. And now you do have to validate your slot. So I believe that that is a very big thing. And I believe that it's also a flex to an Ironman saying that, no, PTO, we're not just going to stand down and give you all of our athletes, let them go to the PTO races, then just rock up to our world championships. They clearly want them at their events, and not saying that the athletes would have done that anyways, because the series is a lot more exciting for them.
I agree. Yeah, good point. It is a double flex. You, well done.
But the only thing that is so comical to read, and this is should be to no surprise, but Ironman can give a world championship slot to anyone they want to. So in reference, they did give one to Matt Russell after the very unfortunate vehicle accident he was at, rightfully so, at Kona.
Same for Laura Siddle this year as well.
And same for Laura Siddle. But the funny thing about it is that they do leave a clause on there that basically anyone they want to select to go to the Ironman World Championships, they can. And so I see two athletes that this is, or three, that is this is extremely important for next year, which is Jan Frodeno, Gustav Eden, Christian Blumenfeld, and I guess Taylor Knipp. If Jan wants to return to Kona, which I still in my mind still think that the fire is still burning, he can, because I'm sure they'll just be like, yeah, we'll give you a slot. But just like what Mark said, the Olympic athletes, this is a massive unfortunate circumstance for them, is they do have to validate. They do have to complete an Ironman. So if you're Christian right now, are you, I mean, of course, I asked Christian myself, I said, what are you going to do now? You're going to, once you just go validate in Florida, just go through the motions. He says, oh, I'm going to validate in Paris because I'm going to win. So.
Awesome. Good. But I suppose just think about it.
I'm sorry.
Go on.
Christian's part-time job is just G-ing up Talbot and
Dude.
I mean, he just, he can do,
it's amazing.
He could just wind those two dudes up. That's, I mean, he triathlon is his full-time gig and his part-time gig. It's just, he's just got strings. He's just Geppetto.
He is.
He's better at his part-time job.
I literally replied to that message. I said, you know that you would make a lot more money if you went like to go be a comedian, not an athlete. Like you can make millions and millions of dollars, but I think he likes being an athlete right now.
So Joe Skipper on that, I asked him about that, about whether they should just give Alistair a slot in Nice if he was fit enough to race. And Joe was like, yeah, of course. Not like it's unfair, he should have to qualify. I think Joe maybe is, some might say it's the other ways, but Joe was of the opinion, you want to race the best in the world. And if you can't beat the best in the world just because they're doing other sports or they're competing in different arenas, like, then it's a hollow victory. I mean, why wouldn't? And it's totally Ironman's prerogative to say, come race. Same as the PTO has wildcards. You know, they can just let anyone race anytime they choose. I've got no dramas with it.
Yeah. So, but it's just interesting to see. They did remove the validation and they did add that. So, Christian, I hate to be a hater on you, but I have one question for you, Christian. Are we going to see Alex Yee and Kona next year?
No chance. But I don't think he'd be bad. I do think they wouldn't do it, though, if someone took the piss. So let's use Magnus, because we know he's a super nice guy, and it's just a hypothetical. If Magnus went and did the PTO series all year, didn't race an Ironman event, said, I want to come and do the World Champs, I would see Ironman saying no. Like, you're not playing the game. We're not just giving away, just because you're a big name and you might do really well. We're not just giving it away. But if it's legit, like Christian going to the Olympics and said,
I'm not in here.
Lionel didn't podium.
No, I mean, they don't have
to do podium.
You don't have to podium. So let's not use Magnus. Let's go, I don't know, Ashley Gentle wants to come and do it, but she doesn't race any of the races. She just does that. And then she says, I want to go to Nice. I could see a guy man saying no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
As they should. Flag.
All right. We have some races we'll run through relatively quick. Challenge races. Barcelona, there was a race that happened there, and someone won.
Yuri Cullen
won. He beat Alistair.
To Brownlee, yeah.
And then Yuri Cullen won again in Mallorca. I mean, the biggest thing about these challenge races, like all three, Barcelona, Mallorca, and then the race this weekend in Fuaca?
Yeah. I guess that probably is.
I
was way off. Anyways, those three races, I mean, we're nearing the end of the challenge ranking series, and so people are trying to get as many points as possible. These races are freaking stacked. Like, the soft scores on these are higher than any of the 70.3s that we've seen in the U.S., at least on the men's side. I mean, the race this weekend had Mathias Margier, who was in sprint finish with Mika New, Rico Bogan, the 70.3 world champion, Aaron Royal, Freddie Funk, Alistair Brownlee. Like, these races are stacked. So just keep your eye out on these challenge
races. Can I cancel them? Not all of the real results, but there's one big standout we've missed there. Imogen Simmons wins back-to-back races, back-to-back weekends on the bounce. Super cool for her. She's like back firing after her podium at 70.3 Worlds. So she won Barcelona and she won Puguera. The Puguera, the amazing thing was that sprint finish where Matthias Marger, well, that was the one where he fell out.
That was Vubeko this weekend.
So he fell over crossing the line. Like, that was a super tight finish. There's other stuff like Alistair Brownlee back racing some big names there. I mean, that Vubo finish list, you're right, Kyle. Alistair Brownlee, Freddie Funk, Aaron Royal, Rico Bogan, Mika Noot, Matthew. That's a, like almost a PTO standard. That if that was top five in a PTO race, you wouldn't be surprised.
No.
Exciting to see this year. I hope that I love, like what Pat mentioned a couple weeks ago, competition breeds excellence. I think Challenge is really going to struggle next year. Roth is going to be hard.
I'm going to agree with Talbot. And my biggest question, 100%. my biggest question is on the back of the announcement from Ironman on Wednesday. Do we think that Thursday morning, the first call that Sam Renouf made was to Felix at Challenge Roth and said, dude, I need help with five events. We're going to take the money that I have, and we're going to dump it into five of your races, because it's clear that the PTO is struggling as an events organization. They're not struggling as a athlete entity, but as an events organization, they need help. That to me seems like the easiest thing to do, to say, look, the reality is there's these three challenge races that just happened. I don't really know where they are unless it's a city like Barcelona. Why couldn't they just take and inject those races with a bunch of their prize money that are, and the reality is too, these challenge races that happen, they're all sorts of distances anyway.
If they were smart, and this is why, okay, erase the challenge name, it's all good, but the whole point of challenge is to sell entry fees. If you take let's just throw out a random race, let's say Challenge Asia, whatever. Whatever race that's at, if you go there and you do the PTO Asia event, that is going to attract, I don't want to say thousands, but hundreds and hundreds of people to come and watch the race and sign up for the challenge event. Just do them two separate days, just like they did in Ibiza. Why wouldn't you?
The problem is the PTO have monetized their own races. So where does the profit from that go? Because the PTO want age groupers racing their race.
Not anymore. They want to get away from that.
They're going to have to give something up. And the reality is that I think they're realizing now how challenging being an events organization is. And, you know, the other thing here is Challenge also should recognize that there's a couple things encroaching on their business as well. This seems like the most opportune time to create some sort of arrangement, a marriage, whatever you want to call it, between the PTO and Challenge.
Agreed. I think the problem we're bashing on the PTO a bit at the moment, because we haven't seen anything. We haven't seen contracts for the pro athletes. They don't know what their races are. Like, the PTO might roll out big contracts, five awesome races, and they might have the King Series. We just don't know that yet.
I want to be very clear. I am not bashing on the PTO, but they know this, time is running out now, because the athletes are making their training plans and their schedules for 2024. If they don't have clarity on that, the athlete and the coaches are just going to say, you know what? Here's a series that's got a ton of new prize money in it. We know the dates, we know the locations. We're going to just start booking it and planning it. And that's it. So I want to be very clear. I'm fully supporting the PTO right now, but they know this, but they've got to put their foot on the gas and they've got to make some consolations to get these events going.
Talbot, just to follow that on. Like I said this to Kat, if she just went all in on the Ironman series now, we could put 50 grand on our Amex card. We could book every flight, every hotel, and every training camp all year and book an entire season. That hasn't happened in the sport in a long time, and that's really cool. Sorry,
I disagreed with Pat on that last week when he said that time's running out. I'm like, no, it's not, because the second they announce, PTO announces all their races, then the athletes will just go to those races. But I was just with Lionel 2 days ago in the Velodrome, and Lionel, and I said, when's your first race? And he said, Oceanside. It's a part of the series.
Oceanside.
And I said, but what about Singapore? It's going to be a week later. And he says, I don't know if Singapore is going to happen. There's no series. And I don't have time to sit around and wait. I need to know when my first race is, and I need to start training for it and build my season. And Oceanside is my first hit out of the year, and that's where it's going to be.
Oceanside,
and I was like,
yeah, Oceanside's going to be lit.
Wow.
And he's right.
Oceanside's
going to be lit.
And Oceanside is where we're going to see 125 pro men. We're going to see 125 pro women. That's going to be the largest pro field ever assembled there before.
100.
So, but to end what I was saying, go for it, Mark.
No, go on, mate. I got one more.
I was saying, to end what I was saying, if we don't see that merger pack, challenge is going to really hurt next year with these top level pros. And unfortunately, this was the most incredible Roth start list we have ever seen this year. And it was absolutely amazing. And they have shown that they put on an incredible show.
Oh.
But I would say that this year will be the weakest if they do not merge with PTO.
You guys think that Challenge is going to merge with PTO after PTO and World Triathlon just did a deal together?
I'm not saying, I want to clarify here. They are partnering for certain events. So they're going to bring in their PTO. If I was negotiating,
it's going to be the governing body. That is completely separate from an event organizer. Completely separate.
They are just using the Challenge brand for their event coordination and licensing.
You're saying it like it's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's
just an idea.
I will say, if a PTO pick up Challenge Roth as one of their races, I will slam Sam Renouf and Chris, etc., because they have said constantly, and Chris, the CEO, that the long distance is not interesting, not broadcastable, it can't work. The athletes have screamed for it. If they just do it now in response to Ironman flexing, it would be hilarious.
But it'd be amazing for the sport.
Nah.
Here's what I'm saying. Time is ticking.
Oh, you make challenge Roth 100K distance? That would be wild.
No.
Worse.
Not what I'm saying.
Make it 100K? Oh, my gosh.
God's sake.
Dude.
I'm going to close here.
We need to take off our tinfoil hats and get back to the results.
Yeah, we're going to get back to results, but I'm just saying we're not done here yet, and I think we're going to have an emergency pod at some point because this ain't over yet.
They will not go down. They will not just lay down. No way. Moving on, there was another big race this weekend, a super cool event, surprisingly stacked field, and I think it came from what we said, the validation. So lots of people signed up for Portugal. To get their validation, same as lots of pros have signed up for Florida, and then the PTO have announced their series, and suddenly these athletes that are squeezing another Ironman in might have been like, oh, for God's sake, I actually don't want to do another Ironman now, I want to save it for 3 next year. But they still tipped up, and there was a huge field at Ironman Portugal. Taking the win in her very first race was Marjolaine Pierre, off the back of a bit of a troubled week, which we'll come on to in the hot take. She took the lead after about 20k on the bike and didn't look back. Really good debut, running sub 3 hours, I think, on the run, and just over 3 hours, on an anything but fast course. The men's side was pretty incredible. I would say the performance of the day and one of the best seasons going has been Peter Heemrijk, who bided his time in the race and took the win in Challenge Portugal in a really convincing fashion. He ran a 2:32 on the run. I think it was maybe a tad short, but it was all around a good race with good coverage as well. But I wonder if the likes of Patrick Langer, who missed T2, did a little ride around, took the blame himself. I wonder if he wished he'd wrapped his season up and got ready for 3 Ironman races next year, but we'll have to see.
And Marjolaine Pierre taking the win was really exciting to see. She has continued to progress, and
she's a lovely girl. Really, really popular amongst the pro field. She's young, talented, very likable. Yeah, I'd say a good result. I think everyone was happy to see it.
Even though there's a massive language barrier, she's always been super nice. We like
talking. She is just lovely. Yeah, for sure.
I thought when you started the opener for that, you were going to talk about like a super Saturday. I saw this Super League race, but I thought you were trying to make a joke. But I was like, Super League Grand Final, crowned 2 new champions, Leo Bergeret and Kate Waugh. It was an incredible race. I didn't have Unfortunately, wasn't able to tune in. But Kyle can give us the rundown because he watched it all.
Oh, can I? I was not at college football. I wasn't in Norman watching a football game yesterday. I was actually watching the Super League race. So Super League proved yet again that they love drama, as the short shoot was given to Henry Schumann instead of Hayden Wild in the men's race, which was controversial in the end because that could have sealed the victory for Hayden Wild. So I'm sure Hayden Wild had some words for his team after the race. The Eagles, who is Christian Blumenfeld's team, Leo Berger's team, they upset and won the team title over the Sharks that were the obvious favorites to win. And then you have Kate Waugh, who's come into her own the last couple of weeks. I mean, after placing fifth at the race in Paris, and then has gone on and really made a name for herself in the Super League racing, cementing herself almost as the next number two girl for Team GB for the Olympics. It's going to start getting really interesting here in the next 3-4 months for whenever they have to start making some decisions and some discretionary slots get awarded. So, but the Super League race happened in Neom. It was exciting as ever. Second place for the teams were the Scorpions, and third place were the Sharks. So that's about all you could say. There's a lot of money in play. Yeah.
Tech Eagles won it all. And speaking of Kate Waugh, she heads to Japan this next week and races our very own Gwen Jorgensen.
Fresh off the back of her World Cup win.
Yeah. That's exciting.
And it's all
we
got.
We don't need to spend a lot of time. Kyle, you want to do the World Cups? I mean, are we going to
recap them all? Not really. I think there's three World Cups since we've recorded a pod last.
Right. So there's been three World
Cups. We've got the most recent one. Let's do the most recent one because the listeners will have, I'm sure, researched this.
Now, we can do the most recent one. I think someone's wife won. What happened to that race, man?
Gwen won.
How would you sweat again?
Yep. The only interesting thing I want to talk about this race because there's one thing that happened that I've never been to or observed a triathlon in World Triathlon that this happened. The water temperature was way north of 21 degrees. It was like 21 high, but the air temperature in the morning was 8. So that made it a wetsuit legal swim. And so it didn't look cold on TV. But like Gwen was like, I'm terrified of how cold it's going to be. And I was like, it's going to be what it'll be. You get to hopefully be warm from your wetsuit. Wetsuit comes off. They take a 3 kilometer out, 3 kilometer back, but it's predominantly uphill on the way out, downhill on the way back. And we see Gwen flustered in T2. She can't get her. She's just like, it's taking forever there. And I'm like, what's going on? And I was just like, well, this is weird. And afterwards, she just texted me 2 minutes after the race and was like, my hands were so cold, I couldn't get my shoes on and I couldn't get the buckle off of my helmet. And so, I think that was just something to be aware of. And I haven't seen a race where it was not a cloud in the sky and the water temp and the air temperature were just that inverse of each other, right? And so that was just an interesting takeaway. And I think this weekend in Miyazaki for a Olympic distance World Cup, it'll be a little bit different. So Talbot's yawning. We've got another, that's Tim Hellwig won on the men's side. And just because I'm hearing about these World Cups, it seems to me like Gwen sent me a photo of where she's staying in Miyazaki. I've never stayed at a World Series event that was in this nice of a resort. Like she's like, they got 3 restaurants, they got a pool, they got a spa, they got a whole thing. And I'm like, I would have loved to have gone. So I've been to
I enjoyed the kids instead without a nanny.
These World Cup venues, I mean, there's some real gems there from World Triathlon.
Right. Let's move on to hot takes.
Right before we go on the hot takes. Very unfortunately, if you refresh the Ironman Pro schedule, they have taken down Ironman Israel off of the pro list. And then also Ironman Israel has released a statement stating that unfortunate due to the news and the shocking events happening over in Israel, the Middle East Championships will be canceled, as well as 70.3 Tiberias Triathlon, which is just very, very unfortunate. So sad to see. Thank you for all the world watching and also the athletes that were all. There's a lot of athletes that are going to go race as well. So
Yeah, our
hearts.
I think the athletes. I saw one athlete post that he was devastated his race was going to be cancelled. And I just thought, just take a step back. There's much more in the world than your race. Like, and it's a tragic situation out there. So let's hope, Israel, we can see it back on the calendar next year. And grim.
And our hearts go out to everyone over there and stand for peace. And on to hot takes. Like,
yeah, so I just put this in because I know we'll get slammed if we don't cover it. Ironman Portugal, it won't be a pro race next year, the full distance. Just saying that. The course was, just no way. The course was so narrow, like single lane, coned off, traffic on one side, multiple laps, and a 70.3 that started before. So on the second lap, the pros were just ripping through age groupers on a 1.5 meter wide road. And then the 70.3 or the slow 70.3 athletes were still on the course when they came on the run. And then it's a lap course. So then the faster age groupers from the Ironman are on the run. And Peter Heimerich said he couldn't even get water at some of the aid stations. And you saw it on the telly. It was just packed. People stood having a drink because they're slow age groupers. Fine. That's what you do. That's what you should be allowed to do. But like Peter Heimerich's trying to win the race and he can't get a drink. He's zigzagging through people. It will not be on that course. They will not run another pro Ironman race. I guarantee you.
I hear their Formula One cars on the course as well because they have to go do a lap around the race course.
That's quite cool, right?
At Portimao. So.
All right. Quite cool. Yeah. Let's go to move on. Oh, to the big news.
Can I do the big
news? Is before we get into it, there was something posted on Instagram and it was a story that. Are you ready for it, guys?
Yeah,
PTO announced Ibiza without announcing Ibiza. They just posted a story about it. So,
do we understand why that was? Because I had one of my athletes text me about it, and they go, the Ibiza date is horrible, and I'm like, well, what do you mean? Where'd you see this? And I go on the PTO's account, and I'm like clicking around, and I'm like, I don't see a post, and then I see that I look at a story, and I see the date. Very perplexing.
It's on the week before Kona, isn't it?
And it's the week after Nice for the women.
Right. Great. Well done.
September 28th and 29th.
That's okay. It's a short course race and a long course. It'll be different athletes anyway.
Yeah. Well, just take the West for Ashley Gentle. Another 100 grand. Easy. Don't worry about it.
You just take every woman that did Nice and just flush their opportunity to do PTO Europe down the toilet. They cannot perform a week later after doing an Ironman World Championship. And so, obviously...
Congrats, Ashley Gentle. Paula Finley gets second. Job done. See you later.
And so, but I mean, this is what I've said all the time. There's no... Triathlon doesn't have the weight or the bearing to dictate to these regions and says, this is when we're doing the event. The region says, no, this is when you're having the event. And this, I think, is an unfortunate... this is just on really, really unfortunate timing. And I read this as the PTO was embarrassed of when the date was and they put it in a story and not as a hard post.
I was just trying to ag everyone on because I everyone's here to listen to Sam Laidlaw. So I was just propping.
Oh, good. That's Talbot. That's Talbot volunteering. To start.
There you go. Play, brother.
All right.
Helmet, take it away.
There you go.
What on?
My thoughts on Sam Laidlaw.
Hold on. If someone hasn't seen the drama, surely everyone's seen the drama by now. Explain.
There was an Instagram post that went out, and my thoughts are on Sam Laidlaw. I'm not going to say anything because I have no thoughts.
I'll do this.
I get myself in trouble. Whether I said something good or bad. So
no,
I'll leave it to the agent.
I'll deal with this. So there's been an Instagram post that Sam Laidlaw did 2 days ago that clearly went viral. Sam has been accused of doping in a very direct manner from an athlete's father. And here's the reality of where I'm going to leave it. And I think the reality is probably Sam Laidlaw's post summed up what happened. I don't think that especially when your child is racing, that you should be sending an email around like he did. I think that's probably pretty inappropriate. I don't think that Sam Laidlow consulted anybody that has any sort of experience in PR, and I don't think that he responded in a way that I would have ever advised an athlete to respond. I don't believe that this story is over, and I, throughout the group chat, I've just been sending popcorn emojis because I think that there's going to be more to come. And I think that you've probably got two people involved in this that are very bold and very hard-headed, and clearly they don't excel in their decision-making process. And I don't think this is over.
I agree on all fronts. I feel a little bit for the other athletes getting dragged into this, because Sam names them. They have said something, whether it be to the ITA, WADA, or someone else, because they felt it needed to be raised. That's then being gossiped about in an email. It's got back to Sam. And this email wasn't. It wasn't to one person. It was not to lots of people.
Yep.
And these athletes are now being called out by someone with a huge platform. And I believe at least one of those did what they thought was right and should have been done discreetly. My issue with it is pro athletes in sport need to talk out about doping accusations. But it can't be just gossip and rumor and done in the way it was done.
Yep.
And I worry that it prevents athletes from talking out about anti-doping issues that are genuine and do deserve to be talked about to the correct organizations. I think athletes will have learned if you have something you need to say, you say it directly to the ITA or to Ironman's anti-doping desk or to WADA, and you don't say it to anyone else. My plea is don't not talk out, but just think about how you do it and where you do it to as a professional athlete, because there are people out there, as Sam's shown, that will destroy you, especially if Sam feels wounded and hurt and accused and, you know, he feels hard done by, and as we can relate to. But I hope it doesn't stop athletes talking out in the future when it's right to.
The crazy thing about it is, and I don't know if this is good or bad, but it could just be coincidence, is that earlier this year, our sport was shocked with the news of Colin. And even myself, as a friend of Colin's, was just completely shocked and taken aback. And in no way saying that any of these accusations are true against Sam. It's crazy that drug allegation and use has been brought to the forefront, whether it's rumors or allegations. It has been brought to the forefront of our sport a second time. We have not seen this. I mean, you always hear he said, she said, when you go to a race, there's gossip and stuff. But the fact that it's been brought to the forefront public eye twice this year is pretty like, wow. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say, do we have a problem with our sport and ask you guys or any of that. But I'm glad it's being talked about. And I'm glad that it's showing other upcoming athletes that there is actions being taken from ITA and all that, and you can still compete clean. So I don't think much more needs to be said.
Yeah, there needs to be a recalibration for the two people that we're talking about here on how they're handling this, in my opinion. And I just I think that the whole thing's unfortunate, and that's, like I said, I don't think we're done. So,
sorry, it's taking me a while. I got the email pulled up. I'll just read it real quick.
What? I was literally about to leave this call. It was like, oh my God, I'm leaving this call. Please leave this podcast.
It's so good.
I did. Mark, can I say what I said to you or on a group text?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, this was pretty funny, Pat. I was thinking this in my head. So the email clearly went to a few people, but how funny would it have been if Rudy Von Berg Sr. And if you are not, guys, this isn't the public sphere, so I'm not. But if, because I want to be very clear, Rudy Von Berg was not involved in this, and he stands by he was not involved in this, and he's posted that on social media as well. But if the email that went out, if in each email something was capitalized or added differently, that you would know if the email ever got leaked on, if you could track it back to which person leaked the email, that would have been freaking chess right there. But
there's no expectation of privacy. Me and you debated this.
Yeah.
Rudolf von Berg said that it was a private email. And how dare he talk about a private email? Talbot, we debated this, and I'm not sure on the legality of it. I think if you send it to as many people as he apparently did, that he's never even met some of them. I don't think you realistically have an expectation of privacy. And I do think there's a case to say that that is then, you know, you making a public statement. Because otherwise, like I said to Talbot, you could buy an email distribution list of 100,000 people and send out anti-political like slander and then just get away with it being like, oh, I sent it directly in an email. It's not slander. I sent it in an email. I didn't say this publicly. I don't think he had any realistic expectation of privacy there, or shouldn't have done.
Yeah. I mean, every email I have ever sent from my inbox, I have a little note at the bottom of it that says this email contains confidential and probable information that is intended for this recipient only if anyone addresses. I don't know. I was told a long time ago to put that in the bottom of emails when I worked for a cybersecurity company.
For sure.
And now I've always there. If Rudy would have had this, or not Rudy, sorry, Senior would have had this in. Yeah. Maybe that would have. I don't know. I guess none of this even matters, really.
Yeah. Here's the reality. Yeah. Here's the other reality is that a few people in my circle know how paranoid I am. They know that I specifically do not text or email anything that I wouldn't be comfortable sharing with the world, because that's the world that we live in right now. And I think this is ultimately a reminder of that. So,
yeah. With that being said, Kyle,
are you going to close this out?
Yeah.
Going to give everyone the outline of what's a few weeks.
Yeah, we're selling the podcast. We're looking for a buyer. We aren't going anything lower than 250K, because that's how much we decided we could live off of for a couple weeks. No, all jokes aside, this marks the end of the season. The season's been absolutely incredible. We started, I would say, just before Oceanside and went all the way through Tacona. So we won't be as frequent as we normally are. We will have shows pop up here and there. Ironman Florida is a stacked start list, of course, if drama comes out, or not drama, but exciting news with PTO officially announcing their start, their race calendar, or things like that. We will have episodes, but we will now move away from our weekly episodes. So the best way you can do is whatever platform you do listen on, if you want to turn on notifications, that would be absolutely amazing for us. And then additionally, we hope you enjoyed the year. It's been an incredible ride. And rate our show. Rate what if you think it's a 1-star, put a 1-star. But we really just want you to put a 5-star, because it really helps us, you know, listeners and stuff.
If you think it's a 1-star, just don't go rate it.
Yeah, sorry, don't.
It's not worth your time. You know, don't waste your time.
If you think it's a 1-star, DM us. If you think it's a 5-star, please leave. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. But turn on notifications. We will get some shows out between now and Christmas. We will do our annual award show. But with that being said, thank you so much for listening. It's been an incredible season, and we will see you soon.
Okay, so Jordan Blanco was able to get some post-race interviews from the Ironman World Championship in Kona from some of the top 10 females. So we're going to leave you with that. Enjoy.
I'm here with Lucy Charles-Barkley. I don't think 5 times the charm is a saying, but how does it feel? It's taken you 5 cracks and you've finally done it.
Yeah, it means more than I could put into words, to be honest. Like, I really do feel like I've dedicated my whole career to trying to win this race. And I think it means even more when you've not quite got it 4 times and then to finally do it. And in the way that I was able to do it today from gun to tape, I think it's just the dream way of me to win this race.
I mean, that's not an easy way to race. I mean, how much information were you getting out there in terms of, obviously, out of the swim, you were leading, so you got a gap, and you see that little, like, split once you're on the bike in town. But after that, did you get much information?
I got a little bit. I had my Cube bike team out there. They were giving me some splits on the whiteboard and just, yeah, giving me as much information as they could. But you never really know at what point that split was from. So it wasn't really till we made the turn at Harvey. I knew it had a pretty good gap, but you've still got such a long way to go. And Taylor was riding so strong. Daniela was riding strong like she always does. And the gaps back, I could see them, but I was just trying to, thank you. I was just trying to kind of stay in my own race. I had a strategy to stick to those watts and see what happens. And luckily I was getting a good gap from doing that.
Then I heard on the run, and they actually interviewed Reese, your husband, on the coverage. Apparently you told him like your Achilles was buggered out, oh, maybe a few kilometers in the run. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, about a week out from the race, I was doing a little, just an easy run, and I felt something go in my Achilles, and my physio has been working on it every day tirelessly, and just trying to get me to the start line. There were times where I didn't actually know if I'd make it on the start line, but I always wanted to give it a shot. But literally from mile one, I was cramping in my calf, and I wasn't sure if it was a pull or what was going on, but I just had to ignore it as much as I could. I had Reese out there yelling at me, just stay with it, keep the pace. And luckily the pace managed to stay pretty strong, even though I was in a hell of a lot of pain.
2:57 is your fastest marathon here in five tries, and six if I include your age group win too.
Yeah, I'm over the moon with that. I think in training, I'd been running really, really well and wanted to run faster than that. But given the circumstances, I'm definitely really happy.
Last question I do remiss to not ask about. You have Lola, you have Pickle. Will your family allow you another dog?
I don't know. I think the only thing I've ever wanted for the last, I don't know, 5-6 years or even longer is to win this race. So I've got my two amazing dogs, and literally with 5K to go, I was like, just imagine running with Lola and Pickle. They're here with you, looking at me running. And yeah, that got me all the way to the finish line.
All right. Well, congratulations, Lucy. Go celebrate with your family and friends. Awesome job.
Thank you so much.
All right. I'm here with Anna Haug, who just finished second at the Ironman World Championships. Congratulations on your day, Anna. Can you walk us through like from the swim onwards, like how the day felt for you?
Yeah, it started pretty good for me. I had like a pretty solid swim for myself, so it was exactly where I wanted to be. So the day started pretty good. And yeah, the first 1 to 2 hours are always pretty hard on the bike, and it was a bit hectic and a lot of tactics involved. But after Harvey, I found myself on my own. So yeah, but I paced myself very well, and I had a goal to like make my nutrition absolute perfect, that I had full energy for the marathon. That was my goal today. And I think I delivered that. I pulled out the best performance I had in me. And yeah, Lucy just had an amazing day today, and she's a deserved world champion, and I'm super happy about my second place.
Lucy's performance was impressive. You mentioned tactics on the bike there. Can you kind of explain like some of the dynamics in the packs?
Yeah, I mean, we have a really stunning start field, so we were pretty much all in one big pack, and then no one wants to be in the back of the pack, because if a tech is in front, and then it's always a bit nervous, and you have to take care not to get a penalty, and if you're in the back of the pack, then it's like this Ziehharmonika effect. And yeah, it's always a little bit hard for the head to concentrate all the time. So when we were at Harvey, I was quite happy to be on my own and not have to like concentrate all the time on the distance. I could just go my pace and pace myself very well, and that really paid off for me.
Yeah. And well, you'd mentioned also that you fueled well on the bike, and you delivered the fastest ever marathon that's ever been done in Kona, 2:48 something. I don't know with the seconds. Can you talk to us about like coming off the bike and like chipping away at the competitors ahead of you?
Yeah, I mean, it's never a guarantee, you know. You never know. Did I pace well? But I did my very best to eat enough, and I just hope for the best. I mean, I had a pretty good season. And I knew my run was really good, but I mean, you have to deliver it after 180K, and you never do it in training. So it's always a bit of a box of chocolate. And I was just like believing that I have done all my work, and now it's deliver time. And I was just believing that I could do it. And yeah, but.
And if I'm correct, this is your fifth Ironman World Championship podium, right? St. George and four in Kona.
Yeah.
That's a stellar career. Already, that's amazing. Congratulations on an amazing day.
Thank you very much.
So I'm here with Laura Phillip, who got her first Ironman World Championship podium here in Kona, Hawaii. Congratulations, Laura. How does that feel?
Thank you so much. Yeah, it feels amazing.
it's really a dream come true. I worked hard for this, and to share the podium with Luthi and Anna, and especially in a race where we had such a strong field, definitely means a lot to me.
Now, a lot of the day, you came out of the swim a little behind many of your competitors, but really moved through the field on the bike. Can you talk to me a little bit about the dynamics of the race and how you navigated your way through the field?
Yeah, I was a bit disappointed, of course, after the swim. I was hoping to be maybe, a bit further up. But when I saw that I'm not even with Anna, I knew I really had to work hard on the bike. And luckily, I had quite some good legs, and I was confident in my bike performance. So, it was really cool to close the gap and to the big group. And then, I made sure that everyone had to work a little bit. And I think, the group kind of exploded, I think, climbing towards Harvey. So that was, I guess, good for me. But I also knew that I maybe overpowered a little bit on the bike. So I knew I really have to be, patient on the run, maybe don't go too fast, and just focus on myself. So when Anna passed me, I knew I need to let her go at this point because I just needed to focus on myself. And then, it was quite an effort to close the gap to Taylor. But she did amazing. And I think the future will belong to her. So I'm glad that I'm just caught her this time.
And on the bike, you actually seem to form I don't know whether alliance is the right word, but working quite well with Jocelyn and Lisa. Can you talk to me about like the effort level in that group, how you work out the dynamic of working together?
Yeah, that was actually great. When I saw that Lisa is making a move, I made sure I will go with her. And from that moment on, I think we kind of shared the work. That was cool. I think we faded a little bit towards the end because I guess, when the run is coming closer, no one really wants to ride in the front anymore. And as I was the only one of this group who had invested like a lot in the beginning, I didn't feel too confident, to do all the work at the end in the front. But we had side wind anyway, so I think we all probably had to work pretty much the same effort level. But that was cool and definitely, a great opportunity that I was able to follow them.
Well, congratulations, an awesome day. It's so to be on the podium. Well done.
Thank you so much.
Hold it. You know, because the last time you took it from me in Yokohama, you actually turned off the microphone. We missed half the interview. So I'm going to hold it. Maybe you move your hands too much. Anyway, I'm here with Taylor Nib. First Ironman Hawaii.
First Ironman.
I was going to say first Ironman Hawaii in the books. First Ironman in the books and fourth place. Can you tell me a little bit about the day and how it unfolded for you?
Well, I think at the press conference, my answer was they asked about what would define success, and I said it was how I overcame challenges, because I've heard that Ironman is all about challenges. And I lost my bottle within first 8 miles of the bike. So I was riding, and I look at the shadow, and I'm like, my cages are empty. That's the reason I knew I lost my bottles.
I didn't even realize when they fell off.
No, I would have stopped and gotten it. So it was just kind of like I had backups, and then that's why I stopped in hobby. Like, I'm guessing I'm the only pro who stopped with both feet on the ground.
30 seconds.
And I like put these in, and then I lost one and got the penalty for that. So like it is what it is. Live and learn. And I think the day was a lot of like, I loved it. Maybe like I was just great when I get to the finish line. My quads are wrecked. But I'm very excited, and it was a great race, and it's a great atmosphere. Like this is what you love about the sport.
So again, back to being your first Ironman, like obviously you had a lot of success at 70.3, a lot of success at PTO, amazing success also at WTCS. You've already got your ticket to Paris. How does this Ironman racing stack up versus the other distances that you're so successful at as well?
Well, I really enjoyed it. I know you're not supposed to do too many Ironmans a year, but this is like, I definitely have the bug. But I think it's also like, it's just so new, and like you want to see improvements. And I think I raced there, and like that's what it was. And I also know in terms of I'd love to have a better prep, and I'd love to have more room for improvement. And so it's like I feel like in just what I've learned in the past 6 weeks has been amazing, and I feel like there's a lot of low hanging fruit, and I enjoy that.
Yeah, and one thing I notice about you when you race is, well, a lot of people talk about your academic background, that you're thoughtful, you've done the homework, you've done the prep. But you also have incredible composure under pressure when things like you lose your bottles, the penalty tent apparently. Can you tell us a little bit about managing through those adverse conditions today?
Well, actually, so the penalty tent, they announced at the pro briefing that there'd be four tents, and the third one, which is the one I got it in between the second and third one, and we were supposed to be at Mauna Loani. So I'm like, okay, like, just kind of prepare for that and be like, get your bottles ready. And I was preparing to like make a new bottle in the penalty tent, because you can do it if you bring the stuff in, and it would have been the same concentrate of what I lost. But then the penalty tent wasn't there, and so it was like a few miles later and I see Ron, the head referee, and I'm like, did I miss the penalty tent? Like, am I DQ'd? And he's like, no, they hadn't set it up yet. So I just like, in terms of if you like, I don't know if I have the composure, but it's just like, I like to do my homework because I like to be prepared because things will go wrong.
Well, and then credit to you that you knew exactly where all the different penalty tents were. I'd have been tempted to like go get a cocktail of them on a lot. Okay, so
I'm staying there, so I could have been tempted to just go home. It's like 2 miles. Like, oh, I'm done. This is a good shootout.
No, but you're right. That this is a race and a distance that it's hard to get wet. Some people do get it right on their first time, but there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. So you have the Paris Olympics next year, but when are you thinking might be the next time for you to start correcting those Ironman mistakes?
Well, so I'm qualified for Nice with 70.3 worlds, and the Ironman sent out their criteria. And if I'm reading it correctly, it says you have to validate with either an Ironman or an Ironman 70.3. Two 70.3s. So I'm not sure. I'm hoping that I could, and like that would be a longer buildup, and hopefully I'll also be in a better position in a lot of ways to kind of do that. But if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, and I'm still 25 right now. So
yeah, yeah. So yeah. One last question. Sorry. You mentioned that you're no longer working with your coach, you know, brand. Do you have news on or able to share who your new coach will be?
I'm still trying to figure everything out. And so it's a work in progress.
All right. Well, congratulations, fourth place. Very impressive on your Ironman World Championship.
Thank you.
So I'm here with Daniela Reeves, who's just informed me that she's an hour late for margaritas. What kept you?
Yeah, I had to go to meet my friends at 2:30 for margaritas, which would have meant that I would have gone 8:05. So that was a little bit of an unrealistic goal to just... You know, sometimes you need a fun goal to push yourself. Obviously, it took me an hour longer today. But we still might have a bit of celebration. I mean, it was not, you know, probably not my best race ever. Definitely not. But considering like how it all went in the last 3 months or 2 months, I have to be happy. Like, I put myself in a good position after having been quite sick and had 6 good weeks. I felt fit and healthy. But I mean, yeah, we're talking about world class racing, and the others were just super, super strong. And I had a solid day, and I felt good. Maybe not so great on the bike; I was a bit struggling there. But actually, overall, I'm quite happy with my performance. And so, super, super happy for Lucy. She did like phenomenal race today. She really led it from the start till the finish. So super impressive. She really deserves it. She had to fight so long for it.
Yeah, and in terms of your race dynamics, you did, it looked like you had to attack pretty early on the bike. So you actually did go for it and really tried to push and break up the group. So that was important, I think, in breaking up that big pack.
Yeah, I wouldn't have called it an attack. It was more like I was building into the race. But then when I was about to attack, there was nothing left. So, yeah, normally I can turn around in Javi and then go like really put the hammer down. And there was no hammer today. So I more like rode into a wall.
You felt like more like the nail.
Yeah, exactly. So that's exactly. It was rough. I really was struggling a bit with like just energy wise and I think the pace was just too high for my fitness. And I was not having that smooth feeling on the bike today. Which on a course like this is just, you have to have it because it's so tough. And I had to admit, I need to drop it a bit on the pace. Otherwise, it would have been a bit of a disaster. So I got worked myself back into it in the last 40Ks. And then I'm actually I'm happy with the run. It was a solid run for me.
Yeah, you definitely had some people, fast people chasing you down and moving through the field. One last question. I've read in the media and maybe even on your social media, you've shared that this might have been your last Kona.
Yeah.
Do you want to come back or do you stand by that?
No, I've been
emotional. Thank you.
No, I'm sure I will come back to the island. I love this island. And but yeah, I do feel I did already reach my potential on that island. And I do also realize, or it's getting harder to get better for me. Especially in the last 2 years. I'm still keen to race Nice. I think next year I want to do another year. But I don't think I'll race here again. So I already had it in mind last year. Then having a bad race, I really wanted to come back. And today I felt like it was good vibes. Like even though it was not the perfect performance, I still was smiling out there. So I think I can finish the race here with a good smile. So that means a lot because I think it's such a tough race. So you want to end it with a good memory and not with like a disaster.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the island will be saying mahalo, Daniela, for everything you've done for the sport. And condolences for the loss of your partner.
Thank you. I'm sure I will come back to the island. I love to be here, and I also would love to do more around the sport. I think I do feel when I'm as an athlete, I can't really give as much as I want to the fans because I'm so focused before the race. So I hope to do more when I'm a little bit, more chilled. If I'm not racing, I definitely could do more other things. So I'm also looking forward to that.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time. Go get your margarita. It's an hour late.
Thank you. I went for it. I didn't let myself get emotionally, let down by anything. I knew I was a ways out on the swim, and then I just chipped away at it on the bike. And honestly, I was surprised like how easily I chipped away at the bike. But, I saw some packs riding together, and I was like, I'm not leaving my fate in anyone's hands, and I'm not going to play the let's make Chelsea pull everyone. That's kind of what was going on when I pulled up. Yeah, they were all... Anyway, I was like, I'm just going for this. I feel great. I went for it, so...
That's amazing. Any kind of things on the run? Like you did a 3:02. I think that's probably one of your better marathons, at least in Hawaii. It's
definitely in Hawaii. I mean, this is only my second time racing here. Last year I ran like a 3:19, so much better. Yeah, I had to use the toilet on the run, which sucks, but I'm glad that I was able to like hold it together as well. I just tried to not let up. I knew towards the end that Chelsea was gaining on me, and I just try to get the best out of myself. Obviously Chelsea's a phenomenal runner and caught me, but I gave what I had and I'm proud of it.
Yeah. You looked actually amazing on the run, like really impressive to stick with it. Like, yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. And here with Tadera Chu, he just finished 8th at the Ironman World Championships in Kona, Hawaii. Can you just talk to me a little bit about your day there?
That was unbelievably hard. I think today, Lucy and all the women ahead of me, like, showed just how much racing has been elevated in recent years. Like, it was ridiculous. I can't wait to see how our sport continues to my race, like, I did the best I possibly could. I emptied the tank, like, probably could have done some things better, differently, whatever, but, like, I'm super happy with top 10 in a world champs.
And more importantly, did you finish your paper before you race?
I did not. I asked for an extension. I haven't checked my email. I just decided, like, I was so stressed out that I needed to just ask. Yeah. Like, if I have to turn it in late, I'll turn it in late. Like,
but juggling motherhood, a PhD program, and racing at this level, like, how much longer can you manage or balance all those?
Yeah, it's really hard. ask me next week. I don't know.
Well, congratulations.
This is my paper first.
Okay. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
Everything you've done. So I'm here with Jocelyn McCauley. She just finished the Ironman World Championships. Can you walk me through your day a little bit, Jocelyn?
Yeah.
You had a big will to play on the bike, by the way.
Yeah. I just got to get my run back. It's coming. I guess there's a glimmer here and there, but not fully back. So, yeah, the swim, I got a good, like, start, and I ended up, like, at the end of the front pack, and then they kept going past me. And so then I was on my own. And then the second pack caught me. And then I pretty much led the second pack all the way in. So then, yeah, came through transition and then out on the bike. I was, you know, one of the top 3-ish, 4-ish on the bike. And I never looked back in a race. It's just, I don't want my competitors to think I'm weak. And I mean, given how you go today, I mean, I think you probably helped someone like Laura Phillip in her race. She got a podium and maybe in part due to your ability and efforts.
Yeah, partly. I mean, they led the most of the ride. Like I led the last, I don't know, 15, 20 miles in. But Lisa was the one who pushed the bike so much. Like she was hammering away. I was like, please, Lisa, I don't want you in front. Can we make me in front or Laura in front? Because then the pace like tapers off a bit. So, but yeah, it's so fun to be out there working together as women and everything. And then I came in and I don't know, I felt like I was a little overheating. So I tried to be conservative the last 10 miles of the bike. Came into the change tent and went out on the run. And it took me a couple miles to like really feel my legs. And then like have some really low points pretty much all through the energy, like from the end of the Lehi to the energy labs. And then like top 10 was in grasp and it was like 2 minutes back. And then it was 1:30 back. And then I kept building on it. And that gave me the motivation to really push it into the end. So,
but given where you started the year with like 2-3 surgeries, I can't even keep track. I'm pretty impressive. You're now 10th in the world in the Ironman Hawaii World Cup.
Oh, thank you.
Congratulations.